Of the hearing before the Plymouth County Board Planning Committee, to actually request a special permit from Maria Pictures and James Schulz, both trustees of the Board of Realty Trust, such as map 12, parcel 38, to construct a three-bedroom house, bridge, and septic system, underground utilities and wetland replication area, and well on parcel 38, set up lot 232. And to construct a bridge septic system and underground utilities on an abutting lot owned by Don Miller's. And with us tonight is Aaron Miller, who sent a letter, or the Miller sent a letter to the last meeting. And Aaron is here in person this time.
Yeah, sorry I couldn't be here earlier. We had a bit of a medical crisis and wasn't able to make the last meeting.
Alright, the first thing I'd like to do, Peter, were you going to send us a letter agreeing to the continuance tonight? There was a question about what time it was going to be, and I thought we had said that you were going to, once you knew whether it was going to be 6 or 8 o'clock, you would send us a note.
Yeah, I thought I did. I'm sorry if it wasn't clear. I think I replied by email that either you or Amanda had sent, and I
there was a confirmation. Okay, great. I sent out a request for asking what time it was like to confirm the ended response. I had that just great. Okay. We should print that out and put it in the file. The next thing I'd like to do is enter into the record. This is a letter from Peter Fuhrbach dated October 13, 2011. Containing supplemental information to the planning board from our hearing last time. You all should have received a copy of this that I sent out earlier in the week. And Aaron Miller's got the original since he didn't get a chance to see that yet. This basically, there are a couple of things here. One is some discussion points that we will go through on the outstanding issues. Two are the documents that Peter introduced to us last time relating to Miller's concern about the legitimacy of the easement and the documents that the Millers had signed along with the Fleckmans and all those other parties that those easements were valid. It also contained a letter regarding the NISA review of the property. And it included elevations for the house, which just inside it, which did seem to have steps that extended beyond the envelope, so this we can address that later. What I'd like to do is do these in slightly different order than they were here in the letter. I'd like to start with the natural heritage issues, Carlos, that you know, you were looking into. Can you explain to the board what your questions were and what you found out?
Yeah, I had raised with Jim at the last meeting whether they had gotten a sign-off from NHGSP. And Jim seemed to believe that they had. And in fact, I was looking, and we asked, I think you said you would send some documentation, and Peter, you did send a document from NHGSP in your packet. But it didn't address the issue of replication, which was the issue I was most interested in. And what I'm understanding is, from Tim Simmons, who I spoke with, that the replication plan that is proposed was not in the original filing with NHGSP. And so it would represent new work in a priority zone, and that would require a review by NHGSP. That's my understanding.
Okay, and can you walk through the documents? I didn't print these out for one, but there's a letter that was in Jim's package, which was that's one dated January 9, which I'm sure everyone got.
Yes, that's, right. I just looked at you and Jim sent. Mm-hmm. That was 2006. And I guess there's an earlier document from NHGSP from 2005. That was supplied by Tim to me.
And what is the significance of that letter?
It seems to be setting up the requirement for a rare plants review, which was done, and then the later letter of 2006 accepts that rap review.
Okay, and then the email that you sent.
Then I spoke on the phone with Tim Simmons at NHGSP, and I asked him about the replication question, and that his point to me, I guess, was that they haven't seen or heard about it to date, and that it was not in the original filing. And he advised me that being new work in a priority zone, it would require a review by NHGSP.
Do you know what the nature or extent of that review is? Is it just looking at the documents that were already submitted and reviewed earlier, or is it?
Well, I don't think that the details are in the earlier filing, so it would probably require some new documentation from Jim, a description of the project.
All right, Jim or Peter?
Yeah, a couple of things. You know, we just saw this, these two emails, the one from Tim Simmons at Natural Heritage to Mr. Montoya, and then Mr. Montoya's forwarding the email to the chairman here. They're looking at it now. And, yeah, a couple of responses. And I certainly didn't speak, and Jim didn't speak to Mr. Simmons, so you know we were not privy to that conversation. So we had, and what he was reviewing and commenting to Mr. Montoya on this. But you know, our response initially is that we have the Natural Heritage letter from January 2006, right? The wetland replication was first approved by the Massachusetts Department of Environmental Protection, the DEP, through the superseding order of conditions. And that superseding order was approved in 2001. It was subsequently appealed by, I believe, the town and one or more of the neighbors, so it went through a full adjudicatory hearing, and it ended up with the final decision from, I believe, the commissioner at DEP with the final order of condition in 2005. So we had a whole state permit proceeding before this January 2006 Natural Heritage letter, and the So I am frankly in disbelief as to Mr. Simmons saying that when Natural Heritage wrote a letter in 2006 after 5 years of state permitting involving the wetland spanning and the wetland replication, and then this 2006 letter saying no further MISA review of the project is required, that it speaks for itself. And to have someone now at Natural Heritage, you know, 5 or 6 years later saying, well, no, we weren't aware of this and they need to refile. I guess, you know, off the cuff, I'm in a bit of disbelief as to Tim Simmons's analysis, if you will. The other thing, or two other things about it, is that if the committee is concerned about the trust complying with a separate state permit. This is not a local permit, it's a state permit. That can be a condition of this special permit. It happens all the time. We've seen it, in fact, with the permit that this committee gave to the Millers in 2007. In that permit, it said it's subject to, in that instance, Conservation Commission approval. So it's not unusual, if that's a concern, that you have that in your permit. And if we happen to need that additional Natural Heritage review, we have to go get it. I don't think we do, but if we need to, we're not going to violate any laws in doing it. So that's another way to address it. The other thing is, I did not go back to look at Section 3 and Section 13 of your zoning bylaws, but I looked at them enough to understand that there is not a permit criteria in there that the applicant needs to comply with natural heritage. I understand the concern. We understand the concern. We don't want to violate any law, but it's not a permit granting criteria. So to the extent that
I agree with you, it's not specified in there. Mm-hmm. As you probably know, in most towns, it's the Conservation Commission that is sort of the triggering agency for those state reviews. But here, where we in the CONCOM have sort of overlapping jurisdictions with regard to clearing, we have found that we've actually approved projects that required state review but hadn't been triggered because there was no wetlands around them. So we have now been working more closely with the state in that area and make sure that if a project is coming to us that's got priority habitat in it, that we ask the question. You are correct that we can condition it, but it's merely a question of trying to find out where we are or where you are in that process.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, if I may.
One board has a question.
Okay. As I explained at the last hearing, no single family home project in Aquinnah has been through as extensive a state and local review as this project. But the reason why Mr. Simmons's comments are completely lacking of substance is because the replication area is in a wooded area. Okay, where we're proposing the replication area, you can see there's a tree line right here, okay, right behind the Miller's house. And all this area up in here is all hardwoods. There is nothing suitable, there is no suitable Arethusa habitat in that wooded area. The only suitable Arethusa habitat was in the Eden area, and that's what we extensively reviewed. The Secretary of Environmental Affairs asked for us to undertake a natural heritage review. It was after 4 or 5 years of review that we got that letter from the director. And I'd also like to add that Mario Di Gregorio has also been out there at least 8 separate times within the easement area. And we have had in 8 separate years, and we've had no evidence of any Arethusa vegetation whatsoever.
Can you let people know who Mario Di Gregorio is?
Mario Di Gregorio is our wetland biologist, and Carlos knows him, but Mario is considered one of the top orchid specialists in the state, and he understands Arethusa habitat and the elements necessary for its growth better than anyone in the state. No, he's a private consultant. He's based out of Falmouth, and he is the one who requested this letter from the director in 2005 or 2006. And like I said, he's been out there at least 8 separate years looking at this, because we've been looking at other endangered species issues for other lands that we own. The last point I'd like to make is that when we originally filed this application to DEP after the CONCOM failed to review it, we were replicating almost 5,000 square feet. We're replicating 4,900 square feet of wetlands. And that was all up in this area up in here. Okay? So one of the things that happened during the NEPA review is we actually reduced the wetland replication area in the wooded area by half. So we made significant reductions in the replication area, and they're just not in suitable Arethusa habitat.
Okay, Berta, and then Carlos.
I was just asking that what the original application was that this letter speaks to, is it the same work that they're applying for now? The same detail, same.
It's exactly the same.
Exactly the same.
So, for instance, in 2001, when the trust received the superseding order from DEP, did it have the wetland span? Was it the final?
Absolutely.
Have the wetland span? Yeah.
Okay. What you see is what was approved by DEP in 2001 after NEPA review and after we reduced the wetland impacts by half through the NEPA process with feedback from Hani Dinkaloo, who was a representative at the Natural Heritage Program.
All right. Carlos and I just pointed out, we do have actually, at the request of the planning board, we do have individual housing lots that are doing studies for plants for endangered species. Carlos?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I don't think that, that Tim was second guessing at all. He probably might very well agree with everything you said. I think his point was just a process issue, which was if it's new work in a priority area and wasn't in the original filing, his opinion that would require a review. That's all.
It's all part of the original.
And also, I just wanted to add that the fact on the DEP issue, my understanding is that NHESP has a different charge from DEP, and DEP's the DEP process, even if it led to court, wouldn't then trump NHESP's jurisdiction in the matter, which is different.
I agree with both things you said, that they do different things. And generally, if we didn't have something previously and we have it now, and if this new part hasn't been approved, we would be. To get that approval. I agree with the both things to say that.
So what do we need to do to figure out what it would be that we would condition that to resolve the...
That the application hasn't varied since it was originally proposed to the secretary in 2001.
Well, I think even more cleaner than that is to say that it's subject to approval under the natural heritage, if applicable.
Okay, and how will we, so your proposal then would be that we make that determination if it's applicable separately after we finish this process, or?
Well, I guess you would, I'm sorry, if you had more to say.
No, I'm just trying to figure out, because I want to move on to some other points, just how, what should we put into process to resolve this question?
But I guess that we would, thinking out loud, that's the condition of approval, subject to approval of natural heritage, if applicable, that before we were able to go forward, we would need to have that assurance that no further natural heritage approval was required.
And is that something that can be done quickly, or is that...
Absolutely.
Okay.
I'd like to say optimistically you can. I don't know. We haven't been in touch with Tim Simmons, but at least prior to getting, say, your building permit,
that's the magic number.
Can it be applied for prior to this committee taking any kind of final action? I mean, with taking a vote, it could be Jim could send off the request to Natural Heritage tomorrow.
Well,
for a review of this, and I do think that there is more than just the Arethusa bulbosa, that the habitat that they would check. They probably have a checklist of some of the of other wetland species and the viability of the switch from the wetland area up to the area where Jim has the replication area. So it could be done. I don't think it has to be done with condition. It could be done in advance of a vote, so we get a letter from them.
Yeah, I guess I'm just going to a fairly recent decision that this committee issued, and it's for the abutter, for the Miller's property, where it said subject to approval by the CONCOM. And it, you didn't require the Millers, according to your decision, to go and apply for that and get it. This committee granted the permit subject to that condition, and I don't think it's unreasonable. I think most boards do that. I think there are, but what you're suggesting is holding up this board from taking action due to a permit that's in the control of a whole separate, not a local agency, a state agency, and I don't think that's commonly done.
All right. Well, what I think we can do, and that's what I was just asking, I don't know, this is not my area of expertise, how quickly that can be turned around and done. And since, as I think everyone knows, we do not have a letter from council as of today on the frontage issue, we can try to address and wrap up maybe all the other issues that we're going to have to meet, you know, again to address frontage. I think Sarah was just asking if it's something to at least be investigated by then. But I don't disagree with you. We can condition it and still protect ourselves.
Mr. Chairman, can I just ask a question? Did the Millers have to, because their project was within the open area here, were they requested to look for endangered species?
I have to get the file. But if it was referred to...
I have no idea.
If it was referred... Who was your... I'd have to review the file. I mean, everybody who goes through CONCOM has to have a letter under a notice of intent sent off for a request for review from DEP, and automatically it goes to National Heritage as well.
And I think the area, as far as what was in our jurisdiction on that one, there was minimal clearing around the house for the work. It was an existing house that was...
That's the other thing, the footprint wasn't...
well, there was an expansion.
Small expansion, but it was an existing house.
Okay. If there's nothing else on this, Jim, do you have... I saw you had some documents with some of the information that we talked about. You bringing for last round about the sizes and square footages and all that?
Yeah, so I have two sets of plans stamped that show the proposed parking area that you asked for, as well as the emergency turnaround. This is the board.
Hold on, before you get started, let me get the demo open up.
Okay, so hold on just a second. So this is a new plot plan.
The revision.
9611 revision.
No, actually, it's the one up top. I should say 10.
Oh, ten, I'm sorry. Thank you.
You work from the bottom up on those.
Okay.
10-18-11. Create a two-car parking area at proposed house and emergency vehicle turnaround T.
So two of the comments on October 4 were a turnaround for an emergency vehicle, and Jim has added that here, designated emergency vehicle turnaround T, that's here, and to show the parking area for the three-bedroom home. He's shown that here, proposed parking area. So those are the two changes on that plan.
Okay. All right. Jim, do you have other the statistical information?
Yeah. So I also have footprint analysis. What we found after reviewing the Miller special permit application was that they exceeded 2,000 square feet. Unlike what Sarah said, they actually substantially increased the footprint from a little over 900 to over 2,000 square feet in their application. And what we did also is supplement, although we're disagreeing with the notion that what's being proposed on the Miller's lot within our easement area is a structure, nonetheless, what we did was we calculated the additional square footage from the retaining walls as well as the bridge decking. I calculated that to be an additional 1,200 square feet of impact to their lot. So right now their permit
So the Miller square footage was, you said it was over 2,000. Do you have a specific figure?
Yeah, specifically what the Miller's application in 2007 requested was to increase their existing footprint, which was 904 square feet, to 2,049.50 square feet. And in the site plan, you can see where the prior footprint of the box house was and then what the expanded footprint is. So again, that's over 2,000 square feet right now as it is.
Can I just stop? We've referenced the Miller's property. We're not trying to pick on you. It is analogous, and there was some discussion through the letter your family had submitted that, mm-hmm. that you know, brought into discussion what your family had done. So I've referred to the permit that you received from this committee in 2007. So I have two copies, okay, and I'm happy to circulate. This first one is the Hughes Home Builders. Looks like it's the application to this board, and Hughes Home Builders did the calculation of the existing footprint and proposed. Mm-hmm. Okay, and then with that then is the notice of decision from this board, and I'll submit one okay. down here, and then I'll start one going this direction too, if anyone wants to see those. So when Mr. DeCoulis talks about roughly greater than a doubling of the Miller's footprint, that's what he's referring to. We're referring to the figures that were in the Miller's application.
Okay, and then Jim, on the bridge, and I understand that you disagree, but can you tell us how you defined when you did the retaining wall area, like on the plan, what was
so here are my calculations, Mr. Chairman. I have two copies to submit.
Okay.
And the way I went about the calculation was that I took the length of the retaining wall mm-hmm. On both sides as well as the bridge abutment and multiplied that linear length times 2 feet.
Okay.
And so, for instance, southwest of the bridge, I came up with a total of 140 linear feet times 2 is 280 square feet. Northeasterly of the bridge, I came up with a linear footage of 110 times 2 is 220. And then, again, as even though we disagree with this being a structure, I considered the full bridge deck as a footprint, even though there's nothing just actually over anything.
So, if I'm summarizing this properly, he's taken the footprint of the retaining wall and not the surface of the road. I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but I'm just saying, repeating that. So he's taking the retaining wall and not what's being retained plus the surface area of the bridge. Right?
That's right. Okay. That's right. And, and this is despite the fact that the Mills, for instance, have a retaining wall on their property and they didn't consider it in their footprint calculations. So, I arrived at a conservative number of 1,200 square feet for all of that impact in the easement area on lot 708. So, 1,200 square feet even is the total footprint area on that lot.
Right, so
1,200 square feet.
In
just the easement area of lot 708. Map 12, parcel 41.
That's the
point, Jim, did you submit that piece of paper?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was doing the same thing. I was reading the first.
Yeah. So it's on the second sheet. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not part of the primary project.
Okay. So the other reason that this is relevant, just to refresh the board's memory, we have a bylaw that says that there can't be more than 2,000 square feet of structure on a lot without a special permit. Dealing with density. And the odd thing, we've never had a situation like this before, is that this is a structure which the owner of the land is not putting up, but it's going in an easement. And we as a board need to address whether that's something, how we deal with that fact. Is that even a concern because it's an easement? Is it something that shouldn't penalize the Millers because it's not for their benefit or use? That's the other reason that we needed those figures, Peter, is to see whether we were over the 2,000 square foot.
Sure. Then we talked about that on October 4. We had to agree to disagree as to whether they actually constitute structure, but we did want to give the info, so at least you had it.
Great.
Go from there.
All right. Do you have any other figures?
Yes. So then the impact on our lot, which is 232, considering the house itself, which is only 26 by 36, that's 936 square feet, then what I factored in was, as you could see from the elevations, there were porches and stairs, and I figured those at 6 feet by 6 feet, conservatively.
Yeah.
Three of those, if you look at the elevations, you'll see that there are two door entrances and one side slider. So I figured three of those at 36 square feet each is 108 square feet. Then, should I refer to the plan on the table, Mr. Chairman, or on the board?
Okay. Either one.
Okay. Sure. So there was one long retaining wall along the driveway right here that's 100 square linear feet, I'm sorry. Yeah, that's on the down gradient side. That's right, Berta. Mm-hmm. So that's, I figured that 2 feet wide, which is very conservative because it's not more than 3 or 4 feet high, at 200 square feet. Then there was a second retaining wall up above, up gradient at 30 linear feet. That was a total of 60 square feet. There's two retaining walls here at this intermittent stream crossing, 30 linear feet each, for a total of 120 square feet. And lastly, there's an extension of a retaining wall from the easement here of only 10 feet. So I factored in that as conservatively as 20 square feet. I arrive at a total number of 1444 square feet.
Which is under 2,000. All right. Everybody understand that calculation? Mm-hmm. All right. Any other?
And no shed, no garage.
No.
Any other figures you want to submit to us?
Attached to what I submitted to the board on October 13, we did provide at the end of that some schematics for the three-bedroom house, floor plans, as well as some elevations.
Yes, we have those, and Jim just addressed the fact that they did, he addressed the additional square footage in them, so. Did anybody have any questions or comments about the structure itself, the elevations? Okay. Why don't we then talk a little bit about the issue of structure? And Peter, you made a couple of points in your letter about why you don't feel it's a structure. Do you want to just elaborate on that to the committee?
In particular, whether the bridge
is
a structure. Looked into that to see how something that's ancillary to, we use the word incident to, another feature that's not itself a structure. The courts had indicated that those ancillary features were not structures. To be a little more concrete about that, the bridge is only proposed to extend the driveway, from where it now ends up into the property. So the bridge is right here. So it's a continuation, and it's shown on there. It's for the 10-foot wide way. And so the driveway, we understand and believe, is not a structure itself. So the bridge, which is an incident of the driveway, is also not a structure. And case that we looked at, and I'm not here to hector you on case law, and you have your own counsel for that, but there was an instance where the highest court, the Supreme Judicial Court, looked at a tennis court, right? And then around tennis courts is usually tall fences around it. And in that particular case, the question was, well, are the fences structures under the bylaw? And what the court said is, well, that the tennis courts is not a structure, and these tall fences are incidents of the court, so they also are not a structure.
And how did that town define structure in its bylaws?
Offhand, I don't know. We think that principle, as I said in the letter, it is applicable here. The bridge is just—it's considered part of the driveway.
In our bylaws, as I'm sure you're aware, tennis courts and swimming pools are included as structures and are specifically mentioned as items that need to be cited. So I think our bylaw, and that's why I asked what that town's bylaw said about a structure, because I think our definition is pretty clear, and at least our practice in terms of how we've interpreted it and implemented it, it would be consistent for us to consider it a structure.
Well, going then from what I did,
or at least as far as Jim's defined it, in the way he measured it.
Well, what did your bylaw doesn't define a road as a structure or a driveway as a structure? So
that's correct.
And if that's the case, something for that road or driveway would also not be a structure. That's the parallel we were trying to draw there. I understand that if we were proposing a tennis court and then we had a fence around it, that the fence could be considered a structure as well.
Right.
But because the town doesn't define driveway as a structure, we didn't think that the bridge for the driveway was a structure. So,
Joanne?
I was just thinking that in some cases, is it true that when we have like a walkway, we say that the walkway, I mean, just the grass isn't the structure, but if someone puts a boardwalk on that walkway, the boardwalk is the structure. So that's where I see the parallel with the bridge and the driveway. When we have a walkway and then someone puts a boardwalk to cross, we consider the boardwalk a structure, but not the grass. Maybe we wouldn't consider the driveway, but is that how we're thinking?
Yeah. And that would be consistent with, again, how Jim measured it. At the last mm-hmm. meeting, I mean, you know, you could argue, well, the stuff that's retained by the mm-hmm. walls might be considered structure, but I think at least to be consistent with what we've done before. Any other comments on the structure?
Mr. Chairman, when you mentioned that your definition, the town's definition of structure includes tennis court, I accepted what you said, but I'm just looking at the definition of structure now, and it doesn't mention it including.
No, it doesn't, but they are included as items that can be an incidental use to a home, but they require additional permits, and they have their own setback requirements and property lines.
I understand that as a use, as opposed to a structure.
Right, but I'm making the same distinction. Use, but also setback. Our setbacks are written as there shall be no structure within 30 feet of a property line. Mm-hmm. Except the tennis court has to be 100 feet from the property line. Mm-hmm. Or a swimming pool has to be 100 feet from the property line. So you are correct. It does not actually use the word structure, but in terms of our siting guidelines, which are basically dealing with the visibility and the placement and impact of man-made structures, I think it's hard. We generally accept the tennis court or swimming pool as a man-made structure. And we use the definition, or we are using a part of the definition that says it's an assemblage of materials designed to provide support.
Support is structure. Okay.
So are we saying that a bridge is not a structure? Is that my misunderstanding of that?
I think we're having that discussion. We believe it's not.
I mean, the dictionary definition actually says something built or constructed as a building, bridge, or dam. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's
of a structure.
The definition of a structure is actually listed as a
well, there are examples of it.
The legal meaning of the Bible.
All right. Well, that's the reason we're having this discussion. We agreed to disagree at the end of the last session, and they wanted to do some work and come back to us.
And then we got into the issue of which lot the structure is actually from footprint.
Well, we know
that became kind of a little more convoluted.
Right.
Because the structure from nearly is probably back.
Right. So hold on just a second. Jim, one thing I noticed when you sent us the order conditions plan, versus this plan, the actual location of the retaining wall appears to be different relative to the property line. Can you, do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I'd be glad to address that.
Yeah, and if, and then let's just, if you look here, folks, on this plan, the stone wall that's part of the retaining wall actually sits on the property line between Walmsley and Miller, whereas in the previous plan submission, it didn't, right?
Mm-hmm.
So is that that the property line moved or the driveway moved?
Well, nothing's moved.
Okay.
What's happened is that we've done additional field surveys out there, and as Mr. Miller may attest to, we had a high-end GPS survey being done out there in May and June, and it was quite annoying, the base station that was set up on the Hollis property, but the whole purpose of it was to look for monumentation that John Mullen had set in 1878. Mr. Mullen, who was the civil engineer who prepared the partition plan of the common lands in 1878, set some key granite stone bounds, which through the GPS we've been able to locate over the last, just recently, within the last year. What we did was I actually showed that one of the granite stone bounds right down here, and we also found, there's a note on the plan, I believe, that talks about another granite stone bound that's, it's about 3,000 feet away, but it's fascinating to see the way Mullen actually did the survey in 1878, because as we talked at the last meeting, Gayhead was wide open, and it was very easy to set up a transit on a knoll and just shoot a few thousand feet. And what he did was he set granite stone bounds at these key spots, which have been difficult to find with all the growth that's occurred over the last 100 years. But because we recently found this granite stone bound and this other one down here, we have made adjustments to the property line for this easement. And that's why what you're referring to, you know, there's an appearance that something's moved. Nothing's moved. The wetland boundaries in the proposed project to stay the same. What's shifted, what's been adjusted is this property line here, which is consistent with the Miller's deed and our deed, and it's been tied into this original monumentation.
Right, but you're right. But then this implies you're proposing to put some stone wall outside the easement and on the Walmsley property.
No, not at all. The only reason why it appears that way is because we're just simply trying to show the stone wall for graphical purposes. It's going to be completely within our property, easement, and our property. It's just shown for graphics. I mean, if you want me to show the stone symbol of that line type smaller, I'd be glad to, but it becomes difficult to see.
Were the stones buried? How did you find them?
The granite stone bounds? Yeah. They were found through calculations and some old surveys that were done. And it was just absolutely fascinating to be uncovering granite bounds that no one's seen for 100 years.
And how do we know that they haven't moved at all?
Because the distances check incredibly. We have distances that are checking from this granite stone bound 3,000 feet down. I also went on to Caroline's property and shot the town bound between Chilmark and Gayhead. I've got photographs of the survey. I shared it actually with Chris Alley as well, because there's, as many of you know, a project being proposed by Verdict where there were some questions as to the boundary there. So it's important that the civil engineers and surveyors get their information together, and what we're uncovering here is just incredible monumentation that was originally set.
So how does that affect my parents' property?
Not at all.
Not at all?
No. Nope. The area is exactly the same.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they did a good job back in 1878.
Incredible. Absolutely. But the problem that Mullen had with the instruments that he had was it was very easy to set up on a knoll and shoot a few thousand feet. But as soon as he started going up into the wooded areas where the stone walls are and the old homesteads, you start to find some pretty big errors, like 10, 20 feet errors.
All right,
Mullen, M-U-L-L-I-N, John Mullen.
Because he couldn't see the over.
He couldn't measure. He didn't have the sophisticated equipment.
1878,
when he finalized that plan that's on record at the probate court.
Is there anything else in here that we should not take quite so literally in terms of its position, size, or anything else?
No, the only thing are those retaining walls. And, you know, for instance, along the common boundary here, they look larger. But if you were to actually measure those stones, they would be the size of this table. So they can't, obviously, we're not going to get stones this large, but just for presentation purposes, that's why they're being shown.
All right. And confirm, tell me if I read the order of conditions correctly. I read that the bridge's width was 13 feet 4 inches. That's the wooden deck on the top. Although, it, again, as we said before, that ultimately the issue of the, whether the easement 10 feet width allows for a bridge of 13 feet or not is an issue the Millers and Florida West ultimately settle separately. I just wanted the board to make sure they were aware of, we didn't have that figure specifically before. And although that could also be a condition that we could put on, that because of the substantial impact that that work would have on the Millers property, that, you know, we might not want to have that work start, even though it's conditioned. That they not go ahead until that issue is resolved. And that would be something we could discuss or decide. Do you have any argument or that you care to share, though, about how you would argue that the 13-foot wide bridge can go in a 10-foot easement?
Yeah, I think it's, we have permission to do that from a separate state agency. Whether we build to that is a whole other thing. But you've probably seen in some instances someone will seek and ask for more than they actually need and then maybe build up to that so they have some flexibility. But what we've proposed is a proposed 10-foot wide access way, the driveway. If the feature... I'm sorry, Amanda?
Just I'm curious about the reference to where that... comes from, if you can go from 13 to 10.
So that if we have, say, from the DEP through the final order of conditions, the permission to build a bridge 13 feet 4 inches, mm-hmm. we have the approval, to at least from them, to go that wide.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean we necessarily have to go that wide. We can make it narrower. And what we've proposed here is a 10-foot wide driveway.
Do you have a reference number from DEP?
He was probably not even aware of the relation, the actual 10-foot. DEP probably looked at this thing as a 40-foot easement. And so a lot of this review probably...
You're referring to the order conditions.
Correct.
Yeah. That's the order conditions. Mm-hmm.
So they don't get into property notes, do they?
At it if it says it's a 40-foot easement, they accept that that's what it is. Don't get into any kind of dispute.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, mm-hmm. as a professional engineer that's been involved in designing and permitting roads for the town as well as the tribe and town, many other highways and roads throughout the Commonwealth, there's no way that an engineer can ethically and responsibly propose a road that's going to involve the use of heavy traffic and cars that's only 10 feet wide for any type of a surface to be driven on. If you're proposing a road, say South Road, there's a 2-foot, there's striping on the road, and the actual traveled lane when you come up here to Town Hall is 12 or 14 feet wide, okay? And then there's a 2-foot shoulder outside the solid white line, okay? But you can't drive, Sarah, on a road that's only 10 feet wide. Okay,
you have to access to one.
Sarah,
you have to account for driver operation. You know, there's no way that you're going to drive 200 feet and have a tolerance of 2 inches. The driver can't do that. So engineers, we have standards. It's called the Green Book. It's by the American Association of State and Highway Transportation Officials, ASHTO. We have specifications not just for highways and secondary roads, but also for driveways. And you need to have a shoulder, regardless of whether the road is 10 feet wide, you need to have a shoulder to account for driver.
But don't those shoulders usually fit within the easement that's been given for the road or the right-of-way for a public road?
No, these are for driveways as well. Driveways need shoulders.
Oh, we're back to the easement. Isn't that something that we said that would be...
It is, but I'm also just...
we do have a 7 o'clock hearing, right?
Yeah.
And I'm waiting for our town council to come back with information.
But we need to make a decision about how we
Are we going to continue on?
Yeah. Okay. I was trying to get to the end, at least try to end the discussion on those issues. But one other thing on, as it relates to the structure question, Peter, in your letter you said that the walls supporting the driveway surface and culvert, is that separate from the walls supporting the bridge?
No, any wall that we have there supporting either the bridge or the culvert is less than 6 feet high. So
6 feet high above grade?
Above grade.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because we, our practice has been for a retaining wall to include the entire height of the wall, including the below grade. And as I read the plan, your walls were anywhere between 6 to 9 feet high, including the footing. Is that a fair interpretation?
Well, we do. It does go below grade. Okay, so I think whatever the depth is. But candidly, we have the strongest agreement over a bylaw that says a wall that's not greater than 6 feet high means that the measurement is the part of the wall that's above the ground and the part of the wall that's below the ground, because it says 6 feet high.
Right. I think the distinction is that the language that's written about that is for fences and walls that are generally providing some screening. A supportive wall is different, and part of the reason we and the building inspector have done that is if you're holding back that much stuff, you want to make sure it's properly engineered so that it's safe, and that's in a, again going back to the definition of that wall being part of the structure holding something up.
Well, we want to do something safe too. We don't want to do anything unsafe. But in terms of how the town defines structure, we think it's something that's higher than 6 feet from the ground. It's not the part that's higher than the ground and the part below the ground, and this might be in the category of us. We agree to disagree on that. I frankly think it's a very unusual and unreasonable interpretation, but that's my view of it.
Right. Does anyone on the board have any other questions as it relates to the question of whether the bridge would be a structure or not for our purposes of siting?
I think we always assume that a bridge or any other, quote, structure, or something you can see that's man-made, is a structure.
Right. Well, let me ask, does anyone on the board disagree and feel that the bridge should not be treated as a structure? All right, then let's quickly, it is 7 o'clock, but let's quickly move on to the second issue there, which is, would we agree that if it's a structure and it's within 30 feet of the property line, we can't approve that? It would require a variance from the ZBA.
Yeah.
All right, so why don't we make a determination or vote on that, and then we can leave that as a decision we've reached. Someone want to make a motion?
So can I just, yeah, after you make the motion, sure, in a second, can I just comment?
You want to comment now?
No, make the
Someone want to make a motion? I would entertain a motion that the bridge is a structure and that as such, the Planning Board Plan Review Committee cannot site it within 30 feet of a property line, and that it would require a variance from the Zoning Board of Appeal.
So moved.
Is there a second? Second. Discussion.
Thank you. The point we would like to make is that just like the Miller's permit was conditioned on approval of the Conservation Commission, that this issue, to the extent it's applicable, can be dealt with via a condition as opposed to grounds for denial.
Yes.
Meaning the board, we'd like to phrase things in the affirmative, which is allow it with the condition that it's subject to approval by the by the ZBA to the extent that that approval is needed.
We can do that, but we'll require that we approve the siding as proposed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we would do that as part of the approval of the siding of the entire project. But yes, we could do that.
Question. Let's say you went to the ZBA and the ZBA felt that it did need to be moved and you proposed a way to move it. Is there any part of this last stretch, especially where it enters Gorda, where that would become a problem from a design point of view?
Sorry, Charles, but you're the one who raised up the natural heritage issue, right? I mean, the reason why this is being expanded where it is to avoid the sphagnum mass, sphagnum moss habitat for Arethusa bulbosa. That's why it was proposed.
Yeah, I'm not bringing this up from a wetland point of view at all.
I know, but if you were to move it, you would be in more, you'd be moving the bridge into an area that would have more of an impact on sphagnum moss. I mean, that was the whole reason for doing this.
I'm not contesting it. I'm just asking the question.
Yeah,
it sounds like it would be a design issue, at least relative to what a plant has to have.
Mm-hmm.
But that can be an argument for keeping it. That's correct.
And that would be an argument
for
the ZBA.
Right. That would be part of your argument for the ZBA. Is we're not, if we treat it as a structure and a setback, it's beyond our hands. If we know that they're going to accept that, then we can say that yes, if we want it cited there, then yes, we would cite it there. And we can let them know that in advance. All right. It's after 7 o'clock. Carlos, was any date of those November dates you were unsure of, or just November 1st?
Was it more than one November date?
Yeah, there were some future dates.
In that first, the first and 7th would be a potential issue.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
Before we move to next hearing dates, then, I'd like to propose an alternative design that Mr. Fairbeck mentioned in his letter, which was an open bottom arch culvert. And I've actually prepared a design. If the board is going to, the board has taken the position that this bridge is a structure and we have to comply with setback requirements with the ZBA, then we would like to propose an alternative that is different than a bridge, which both MassDEP, New York State Department of Environmental Conservation, and also the Vermont Department of Environmental Services has considered as an acceptable stream crossing. And what I've done is I've prepared an alternative design.
Just in terms of timing, if in your letter when you mentioned this, I was interpreting it as if you're saying if the board's objection is to a bridge per se, that there would be an alternative. I haven't heard the board objecting to a bridge per se as the issue. It was really whether it was a structure or not.
Okay.
And I don't hear anybody jumping in and saying, no, we don't like bridges per se. The second question is just in layman's terms, you're saying there's no impact between this other alternative and the bridge?
No. Jim can discuss the
Open bottom culverts.
Open bottom culverts. Mm. And they involve less wetland filling than the bridge. The bridge involved even less filling than a typical culvert. So the typical culvert has the most filling. The bridge has a little bit less, or some amount less, and then this open bottom culvert is even less wetland filling. So as to your question, is there a different impact? It's a less of an impact. Do you want to?
So what I propose, which I have two copies of, is four 18-foot arch culverts spanning that wetland area, which is on the back side of this, and also an arch culvert spanning the intermittent stream. And
Do you have another copy that we can
show? Yeah, there's a copy right here.
Oh, you can see it? Okay.
So, how do I refer to this document?
This is referred to as with the second, with the fourth revision.
In 1018, fourth revision.
Yeah. You place the bridge in 18-inch culvert over the bottom culvert.
So then it has to go back to
the reduced wetland filled area.
Nope, it's amended.
It's a new design.
Okay, if you say so, but I believe it's amended and it fits their policy.
But you haven't done that yet.
Nope, but we'd like to make that.
You have to go back to them and you have to go to Natural Heritage and so, okay.
I disagree with what you just said, Sarah.
Just so you don't get the impression we threw this out there to see if it would stick against the wall, we did look into this process, and as we've mentioned, we have the final order of conditions issued by DEP. Separately, Superior Court said the DEP superseding order, the final order, is going to govern this project for the bylaw. Now, DEP has a wetland
policy
about amending an order of conditions. And we've looked into it, and it's essentially we apply to DEP, we have to publish notice, we notify the Conservation Commission as a public comment period, all the info comes back to DEP, and they decide whether to amend the order of conditions. And they'll either give it a yes or no. We think they'll give it a yes, because if you are causing less wetland impacts, that's the basis for amending the order of conditions.
And then to try to cut to the quicker, then I'm assuming you're saying that there's no structure here. It's just a road with a culvert underneath,
correct,
which we have not treated as historically as something that is in our purview.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Mm-hmm.
If this has less impact, I wonder why you didn't just go for that in the first place.
Because this was the bridge we felt was the better design. And as a matter of fact, if you read MassDEP stream crossing standards, they recommend the bridge as the first preference. The second preference is an open bottom.
So the open bottom has less impact on the environment, but from a driving point of view, it's not as interesting or not as successful.
What's the drawback to the open bottom culvert versus the...
The drawback is not as clear of a span. We have, as you look at the drawing there, you'll see that there's 4 18-foot culverts proposed here. And there's footings in between. So it's not a clear 50-foot span. But the overall span across that wetland resource area on lot 708 is 56 feet. It's more than the 50 feet right now. And we're also proposing an open bottom box culvert at the, or arch culvert at the intermittent stream crossing and reducing wetland resource impacts at that location as well.
I'm still confused as to why this is less impact.
Do you have that the plan we submitted just earlier?
The first one?
Okay, if I may. If I can just grab that. Thank you. Okay. So here's the one with the open bottom culverts. Okay, here's the one with the bridge. You see, leading up to the bridge, we had a certain amount of wetland filling to get to the bridge. We don't need to do that wetland filling.
As much.
Okay. There's a little bit, but it's not as much as here. There's a second wetland crossing, which is here, which is a culvert, and it had wetland filling. But with the open bottom culvert, it's a big enough span that we can get on both sides of the wetland, so we minimize wetland filling here.
Significantly.
Now, going back to 2001 when DEP approved this, the total amount of wetland filling was less than 5,000 square feet.
With the bridge.
With the bridge. And that's why they approved it.
Right.
This is going to have even less wetland filling than the bridge. So.
And MISA has responded to this with their concern and
no, we have not presented this to MISA.
And Natural Heritage hasn't commented on this either.
Yeah. This? The arch culvert? No, they haven't. We haven't submitted it to them.
Right.
So the reason that the DEP would prefer the bridge approach is what? What is their thinking?
Because it's a larger span. It's a 50-foot span. One full continuous 50-foot span, whereas these box culverts would be 4 separate 18-foot spans.
And so this is despite the fact that the culverts have less impact?
Overall. individually, no, but overall.
Is that an opinion?
Would my assumption be that it's a toss-up? Is that what you're saying?
I assume, Jim, it's your opinion, but do we have an opinion based on other wetland people that, including DEP?
From the stream, it's in DEP stream crossing standards, Sarah.
Right, what a national language.
And does this mean that you would have less wetland replication to do?
That's correct.
I guess I can't understand why this wasn't proposed in the beginning.
Well, frankly, I think going back to this bridge as a structure, which we talked about on October 4, that wasn't an issue back in 2001 or 2005. It's become an issue, and to deal with it, we've proposed this because it would be a culvert, and that is not a structure, and they've been approved.
Point of order. Because we have a vote on the table, this is a new, what I would consider a new proposal, because it's a change in stream. Wouldn't the proper thing to do is to finish our vote and or not vote, take back, which would be better.
Yeah, that's what I was
and then and then we could
continue
with this, see if it has to be re-advertised as a new application. I think that's more what we need to be dealing with right now, if they want to do that. And we have people waiting.
I agree. I was going to say that I think it probably makes sense to withdraw the motion and consider this further. Let me ask one last question. If you had your druthers, if the ZBA would say no problem to the bridge, which would you prefer to do or not?
That's an interesting psychological question. What's lurking behind that question? We want approval. Okay, we want something you're satisfied with, and I think we would do either.
You know, I'd like to remind you too that it was the town that recommended the bridge back in 1999.
We're not saying no to the bridge.
Mm-hmm. But it sounds as though there's a big impediment being put up again.
Your technicality is more than an impediment.
You're saying Dick Barbini is the one that raised it.
And did. Ron Rappaport before Judge Mark Green.
There are so many cases, and what's confusing is how, and I think Bert is right, we need to move on. There were several different court cases where some of these same issues came up, not just one, not just two, and so I think if this is a new application and that's the way you want to go, Bert is actually right, we need to re-advertise it. The neighbors need to know what they're getting and what's being proposed for this area. So let's kind of move forward.
Mr. Chairman, to your question, we would ask that at the proper time the board take up both approaches. Take a separate vote on the bridge. Take a separate vote on the arch culverts. The purpose behind the advertisement is to notify the world what someone's proposing. Here they are aware there's a bridge. And if someone's concerned about the bridge being a structure, they were given notice. What we're now doing is something less of a zoning impact, if you will. So there's no need to re-advertise. And without speaking with my client, we would assume the risk of that determination. Mr. Miller is here, and he's aware of this, so we don't agree that it needs to be re-advertised. We do want to hash this issue out as quickly as possible.
What I would recommend, on the surface, I don't disagree with you on the surface. The part of it is I just don't quite know enough about the culvert yet to know whether, from a zoning point of view, I agree with you, from a zoning point of view, it appears to be less of a zoning impact. Maybe what we should do is withdraw the motion, continue to a date that gives us some time for you to submit, if you could give us some writing to support what you're saying about this so that we can make a determination or I can make a determination on that point, at least on the advertising, and then try to confirm what you're saying about its advantages or disadvantages from an environmental point of view. Not that that's in our purview, but it's certainly, you know, we'd like to know what that is, and then go forward. So I think I was originally thinking to try to get a date sooner rather than later, but I think we should allow a little bit more time here so that if we need to re-advertise or do something, we have more time. The 15th of November is a date that was good for everybody except Joanne and me to get child care. And Carlos,
I'm good on the 15th.
You're good on the 15th.
Right, Bertie and I here on the 16th.
The 16th is bad for a couple of people.
Yeah.
Okay. Gerald will be away, but Nettie's supposed to come help me, so hopefully that would be.
So October 25th is our question.
If we did.
15th is preparable because. Oh, wait, when is Selectman's meeting?
If we didn't start at 6, it would be better for me.
So are we in November now?
So that's the third Tuesday in November.
Are your meetings changing at all, Jim, because of the election? You not meet on the first or when?
What's the election?
I think it's the 8th, November 8th.
Then we will not.
Okay, then.
Yeah, but we would meet the first Tuesday, which is November 1st.
First.
And then we would meet the 22nd.
Oh, not the 15th.
Or maybe, no, you know what, it would be the
15th. But
we can't meet on the 8th. Can we meet on the 8th?
No, not watching.
We can't.
What's your ferry situation?
When?
On the 15th.
Oh, I'm assuming it's going to be fine.
Well, no, I say it's probably not advisable for us to try to start at 6 on the same day they have a selectmen's meeting.
Mm-hmm.
We sort of lucked out tonight, but if we were going to go at 6 o'clock, I'd like to have it start promptly at 6. And somebody else was saying...
Well, it's hard for me to get chocolate by 6. I can get it chocolate by 7.
If we started at 7, what is that? How much time do you guys have?
We have an hour and a half.
An hour and a half?
9:30 boat.
Okay. All right. Well, then, let's I propose that we continue this to November 15th at 7 o'clock. I will block an hour and a half, so we can try to get through as much as possible. If you can send me some good information, not that you haven't said it, but just so that I have it, I'm not misinterpreting what you're saying about this your alternative proposal, so we can make an evaluation of it.
Did you
withdraw the motion?
No. Jim, who made the motion?
I did. No, I did. Yeah, I did. So.
And Jed second?
Mm-hmm. So?
I withdraw the motion.
I withdraw the second. Okay.
Okay.
Motion is withdrawn. Interesting. any other comments?
So, Ms. Thompson.
Well, I was going to say, just for next time, it would help me, like, I know what a bridge is, but maybe if you can bring a picture or, like, draw a cross-section for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because that would help me kind of understand it better than, this whole thing, what it would actually look like. Because I know what a bridge is, but when I look at it this way and here, it's like open bottom culvert, I don't really know what that is, so help me know.
Do we have any of these in the
panel? And then the other thing is that next time we'd be talking about tree cutting, some of the other issues that would come up would be the frontage and the tree cutting.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then maybe we can get a sense, like Emma, John, and Berta, if the culverts are displacing soils and stuff, and how many, we have to know how many there are, and I guess, like Dr. Orm saying, the whole design for the...
It's just five.
That's obviously digging the culverts.
There's five to hold them. but it's four.
It's five footings to hold four culverts.
Okay. All right, so we'll hear all about that.
You hear the types of questions people have, and so you can try to address some of those. I know it sounds like it's overlapping somewhat with the conservation issues, but if you can at least let us know what it is physically.
Chairman, going back to town council's opinion on the frontage, when could we expect that to be resolved?
I'm hoping within a week, but because I was originally going to try to continue for a week or two, but the letter that you sent that we got late last week is something else they had to address, and so I don't know exactly where they are, but it was last I heard today was it was they were not going to be able to do it today, but I'm guessing a week, which probably means we should say two.
If we say to the end of the month or 2 weeks, it still allows us enough before the 15th to look at it, and we're not addressing it on the fly, and you're not, so if you could sufficiently in advance of that, and we will do the same with the information we need to get to you.
Great. All right, is there anything else? All right, hearing is closed.
Closed and continued from 11:15 at 5 p.m.
No, 7 p.m. Okay.
I think we maybe can move to the other room.